Before and after Daisy Elliott's time in political office, a personal statement could be just as explosive as a public run. Jim Toy grew up in Ohio and moved to Michigan as a young man in the late 1960s. He studied at the University of Michigan and became involved in the anti-war movement, bursting onto the scene with an unexpected announcement in 1970 that set him on the path to become one of Michigan's most influential LGBTQ activists. He went on to help start the university's Human Sexuality Office and co-wrote Ann Arbor's non-discrimination policy. Jim Toy, age 90, joins us now from his home. Jim, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you, thank you.
You grew up biracial and gay in a small town in the Midwest, and I wondered if, when you were a young man, did you ever think that you would speak publicly about things like that?
Well, I had no knowledge of, let me put it that way, that I was gay. Biracial, yes, but I had no knowledge of my sexual orientation.
Yeah. At what point did you get to a place where you felt like not only you understood a little bit more about it, but that you wanted to say something?
It was really gradual over time, and I don't know that I could put precise date on it, although I came out publicly, I think it was, what, April 15, 1970, mm-hmm. in the course of an anti-Vietnam War rally.
I understand that the official speaker that day did not show up and that you were, shall we say, a last-minute fill-in on the bill?
Well, the official speaker walked off, as I recall.
Yeah.
And said he was not going to talk. So we all looked at each other. What are we going to do here? And I had a yellow pad for some reason. And I finally said, well, I'll say something. So I scribbled away, and then I said whatever I said.
Do you remember what the immediate reaction was to the speech that you gave that day?
I don't recall any particular reaction. There may have been, but it's not in my memory. And my memory is terrible.
That's okay. And yet this has become one of the best-known coming-out stories in Michigan history.
Well, I'm stubborn. I am committed to making as much trouble as I can to create and maintain justice.
At this time in your life, you were in your 20s. You had studied at the U of M's musicology program.
Yeah.
And played organ and directed choirs.
Yeah, yeah.
At St. Joseph's in Detroit.
It's true.
Did you feel at the time, were you very much aware of the ways in which your life was constrained? Or were you the kind of person who felt like you were making the life that was available to you?
What you just said, yes. I was creating, I guess, I'll use that term, as I went. And fortunately, I was well received.
Yeah. During your time at Michigan, you were involved in establishing the Human Sexuality Office, as it was called.
Yeah.
And it was really the first of its kind.
Oh, yeah.
What kind of work did you want the office to do?
Well, since we were creating our agenda as we went, and so I was committed to establishing and maintaining justice.
What did that mean to you at the time?
Well, it meant, for example, I was working for what was called in those years the Affirmative Action Office, and then it changed its name to the Office of Institutional Equity, and there was an office for women's concerns that had a paid staff. And there was an office for racial issues that had a paid staff. And someone said to me, well, here are these offices. Don't you want an office to address sexual orientation concerns? And aha, it was like an aha moment. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of things did you see happening to people that you felt like you could make a difference?
At that point and at that time, there was no organized support for people who were identifying as bisexual or homosexual or who were addressing concerns of gender identity.
Yeah.
So we felt we've got to do this.
Jim, I wanted to ask, you were doing a lot of organizing and a lot of advocacy in the years when AIDS and HIV were reaching pandemic stage.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking a lot about those years with respect to the pandemic that's going on right now.
Oh, yeah.
And how entire generations can be shaped by that magnitude of loss.
Absolutely.
How would you say your survival in that time and your work to help victims of the pandemic changed you as an organizer?
Well, in my memory, and again, which is not to be trusted, I was committed to working for justice. And so I guess I may have told myself, okay, you're going to do all you can do, find as much support as you can. So that's what I tried to do.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts for people who may be coming to terms with themselves in such a radically different time? Even though they may have employment protections, even though they may have freedom to marry, still sort of have this internal fear about what their lives will be like.
Yes.
Is there anything you would say to someone in that situation?
I would possibly say, quote, I hope that you will recognize yourself for who you are and your entire being, and that you will find support for yourself, and that you will find community support for yourself. And I wish you the best.
Yeah. Jim, I wonder, you've made so many contributions, and we certainly wouldn't ask any more out of citizen participation than all the things you've done, but do you have any future plans?
As best I can to keep on doing what I've been doing, because, I'll say it again, I'm stubborn and I feel called to work for justice. That's what I'm going to do, and that's what I am doing, and that's what I'm going to do.
Well, that's awesome. We really thank you for taking some time to talk to us, and thank you for all your work.
It's very kind of you to call. Thanks to all of you.
We're glad to hear your voice. You take care of yourself.
And you too. Be safe. Be well.
Yes, sir.